Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is my friend Dan Platt. And Dan ran for Albany County Executive on the Green Party line. So Dan is here to talk about the presidential race and Jill Stein and what's going on. His thoughts about what's going on in the county. So, Dan, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Getting sniffles, but it seems a cold's been going around. I've been hearing a lot of people get it. But I'm good. I'm
so
good.
The presidential race seems to be heating up, but yet there is still no coverage for Jill Stein. Can you tell our listeners why you think mainstream media is not covering Jill Stein?
Well, the answer is pretty simple. Simple answer is it's class war. More simplified answer is there's interests at work that do not want to cover third party candidates or even I would say real independent candidates. There's Lawrence Lessig is running in the Democratic primary, but you wouldn't know that because the corporate media does not want to cover him because he will point out larger corruption about, because he's running as the get money out of politics candidate. Sanders can mention it from time to time, but he must kind of keep to a different kind of track and not hit the establishment that hard. I'm being a devil's advocate here in taking the position that he's a sheepdog, meaning his role is to keep people in the Democratic Party and to get people excited about voting for a Democrat. Polls are kind of wonky as in I'm not sure, but there was this Politico poll that said 80% of Sanders supporters were very sure they wanted to make sure that Democrat won no matter what, so if Bernie lost, they would be voting for Clinton. I'm not sure how accurate that is, because then, of course, there's imaging about how many Sanders supporters do not want to vote for Hillary, and they do want to turn away from what can be termed lesser evilism, where one votes for the lesser evil. But as Jill Stein will put it, both parties, Democrat and Republican, are both evil. They're complicit and bipartisan in many of the policies that people do not like, whether it's our imperialist foreign policy, whether it's all the above energy and the police state, and its myriad forms, whether it's the military growth or growth in militarized police, policing, surveillance, and all those other issues.
How many people do you think, if the election was held to given media coverage that now has transpired, what percentage of the vote do you think Jill Stein would get?
Well, we got, in 2012, we got 0.5%, if I recall. And that was when the left-wing media, even like independent, non-corporate media, wasn't covering her, or they covered her just in the last month of the campaign. This time they've been covering her for the last 2 years. She appears on things. RT has been pretty generous with time, and that's why she's kind of developed almost a name relationship with President Putin. She's invited to Russia. She also traveled abroad. She went to the Paris conference for the climate change, COP21, and then skipped over to Russia today. RT is another media channel that's basically state-owned by Russia, and she went to their conference and met with Putin and other dignitaries kind of to get her foreign policy chops. So she has been growing that way. She's also been working extremely hard promoting the Green Party, which is why she's kind of front runner. She's kind of worked the hardest. But I did hold a party, a form watching party, where me and some other Greens watched our other candidates. We had five in total. And whatever weaknesses or strengths Jill Stein has, all the other candidates also have them too, meaning you put them all together, as one member remarked, and you would have an unstoppable candidate. Now, that's usually not, that's not how politics works, but if you have a slate, you know, it feels like they're all running. So we have a theorist, his name's Bill Kimmel. We have, you know, he's been in academia for 30 years. He's published 9 books. Another guy, Kent Mansplay. He is much more paradigm shift kind of guy, bioregionalism, local economy. Another guy is Dale Czerny. He had more energy, more unconventional responses. I'm getting into other territory here. And then a black woman, Miss Curry Saddam, she has a very long name, but she's more of a motivational speaker, very high energy, very spirited. And then you have Stein, who has been doing more independent media. So maybe it would be up to a 1% polling to answer your question. Nader got 3%, and that was with his name recognition. But he also wasn't getting that much media coverage either. Or he was, but it then becomes all negative. Oh, he's running, he's a spoiler. And then it just becomes one hit piece after another. So I suppose if you start seeing those out of HuffPo and Washington Post, then I guess it means we've made it. You're still not seeing that much. I think there was one piece where it was about how real socialists want Sanders to lose, and that kind of, it wasn't false, but it kind of, again, painted like, well, independent candidates, when they're not in the main parties, are spoilers. And that's only because of our rigged election system. So if you really wanted that political revolution, you need to run local candidates so we can fix our petitioning system, our public financing system, and et cetera. And I can go into that with local campaigns and the struggles that exist there, like when I ran.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the lack of coverage stems from 2000, Florida 2000. Do you think because of Florida 2000, you don't?
I would say no, because like my first answer, it's more in the class interests of corporate media and all of those journalists that work for Hearst, that work for other large corporations. And again, the multinationals, as they're called, own pretty much every company. They're all very much connected. NBC and all those affiliates are owned by GE. ABC and all those affiliates are owned by GE. Not GE, Disney, and so on and so forth. And Fox News with the Murdoch Empire. It's all very much a bunch of oligarchs, as they're called. A few people in power, almost like a corporate aristocracy. That's not really, you can get into it if you play by their rules and if you do follow and work for their interests, which is what most journalists do. They're just kind of working their job, just doing their jobs, as they would say. And it's not with any particular malice, it's just what's in their interest. You kind of see that split with Democratic primary voters. Hillary Clinton supporters are mostly of a middle class, or what would be more accurate to call them the professional managerial class, people who are managers, people who are professionals, people who are more concerned with getting things done with how things work now, versus working class voters, younger voters who are struggling and want to change how things work. And that's the appeal of Sanders and Trump. They're both coming at it differently. They're playing the same game as other politicians. They just have different strategies and a different way of playing that game, different tactics. But there's what Trump and Sanders kind of do. They're very similar, actually. I actually watched 20 minutes of Trump at one of his rallies. And what I found was 60% of that 20 minutes was not dumb ideas, but it was pretty much what Sanders says. He spent 10 minutes talking about drugs and how costly they are, and why and how the government, because of corrupt reasons, because of special interests, which he is one, but because of special interests, drug prices are through the roof, and I'll make a deal to negotiate them, blah, blah. But that's similar to what Sanders says. Special interests donate money and get preferential treatment, and then we can't negotiate drug prices, so we're almost paying the same as if it were over the counter. And they're both kind of offering free stuff. It's just different free stuff, extremely different free stuff. So Trump is offering a free wall and a free military, you know, and a free other, you know, right-wing things. And then Sanders offers free college and free health care and so on. Offering free stuff is not power. Building a wall does not make the average American a more powerful at negotiating when they're negotiating wages, negotiating a job. Free health care kind of does, and a free college does. But it doesn't empower people to have the type of education they want. It doesn't empower people to have control over their economic destiny, which is kind of the Green Party difference. So when Stein goes on TV or independent media, she talks about how what makes her similar to Sanders, because that's kind of almost a critique, like, oh, you Greens, you're just like Sanders. No. Sanders, I'm going to make it about Sanders, but Stein is offering in foreign policy a peace offensive. A weapons embargo is the main policy proposal. No Democratic candidate or anyone else is talking about a weapons embargo. We just keep throwing more fuel on that fire if we just keep bombing and importing weapons or exporting our weapons. And then there's the Green New Deal, which is, you know, kind of state-led, but its purpose and its intent is to have local economic development on local people's terms, to democratize it, to put power in workers' hands, in the citizens' hands, through participatory means, because that's what real freedom is. You can kind of define freedom as a lack of government or positive attributes like participation, information. What was the third thing? It's not coming to me. But pro-social and pro-fun. You know, if there's a lack of fun, then maybe it's not participatory enough. If there's a lack of participation, it's because there's a lack of information. The interplay of these four things allow for freedom, or at least what we think of as being freedom. And that's what the Green Party offers versus just free stuff, whether it's walls or college. Because it could be a free college, but all the degrees could be in cybersecurity.
Now, you know, I just briefly mentioned the lack of media coverage that Jill Stein is getting. For quite a while, Hillary Clinton has dominated the news. And if you watch NBC, MSNBC for a while, they've been saying, oh, Hillary's going to be the next president. Hillary's going to be the candidate. And I'm trying to assess this. Do you think Hillary is an invention of the media?
No, she's an invention of American politics, just as kind of Trump is. They both exist as candidates the way that the electorate, which is not all Americans, very clear to make that point, as they want them to be. So Trump is what, say, the average American expects of a candidate, you know, bully, who's tough, who offers free stuff. And a counterpoint to that is then Hillary, who is the experienced veteran of the system who can get things done. Probably not hearing a lot of, there's a bit of it, but what is Hillary want to do? Like, what is she going to get done? And that question is probably horrifying if they ever answer it, if they're honest. Because if we're talking about Obama, what is Obama getting done? He's getting done the Republican health, he got done the Republican health care plan from the 80s, or the early 90s. You know, whatever Reagan couldn't pass in the 80s, third-way Democrats have been passing since. Whether it's welfare reform cutting it, or the health care plan that basically sends billions and billions to the insurance industry. He is doing the free trade agreement, which is NAFTA on steroids, as it's called, but it's so much more than that. It's basically restricting copyright, putting a clamshell on that. It's creating courts. I could go on. You should have another guest to talk about TPP, probably have. But it's just horrible. And the mainstream media, like with the Clinton campaign, will cover it positively. They'll say, hey, New Zealand just signed the trade agreement, as if this is good news. It's horrible news. It's basically American foreign policy or American empire strangling these countries, basically kind of inviting them in, like, sign our agreement. Otherwise, you'll have to sign some agreement with China. So we're kind of playing Cold War politics with China, but instead of military alliance, it's an economic alliance where we have the same copyright and economic, in this judiciary system that's extra national, meaning that it's above the nation, and it'll make decisions for nations and you and me. And that's the kind of things that Obama and Hillary and other Democrats have gotten done, as well as those little social things like, oh, yes, we'll cave on gay marriage and we'll cave on these some of these other issues when pressured. But then there will be many other things like union rights where they'll do absolutely nothing. They'll talk big and do nothing. And you can see that on any level of government, which is why you see on any level of government, Democrats, elected Democrats, it's all one big colossus as a way to describe it. It's all one machine. You support Hillary if you're in it. And if you're not, then you don't get any help from us. You're not in the club. And Sanders is in that club as well. He gets help from Democrats because he endorses them. And Democrats don't run anyone against him in Vermont. If he did, he'd actually have to fight for his seat every year. But he doesn't.
That's interesting. So let's talk a little bit about local stuff. Albany County, the city of Albany. What's your thoughts about what's going on in Albany County and the city?
Well, I think whatever the problem is, whatever we're talking about, whether it's education, taxes, the city's finances, there isn't anything particularly strong happening on the county level. I know the Reform Democrats have proposed some family work time kind of legislation. Uh-huh. I don't know if that affects county workers or beyond. It's certainly a strong push early on. But whatever the issue is, it's kind of a culmination of what's called neoliberal policy. And it's kind of, to describe it bluntly, it's classical economics taken to absurd conclusions, that you take away people's kind of decision-making power, and you put it in markets, you put it in money, and you let capital decide. One of the issues at stake is that over my lifetime or before I was born, New York's the amount of revenue sharing that was between the state and localities. It used to be 6%, meaning that in all the state income taxes that we would pay, we get 6% of it back. It's been cut to 2%, by a third, down to a third. And that's kind of, that missing 4% is basically that, to simplify it, that $12 million that's missing from Albany's budget. It's the money we don't have to fix various things, our infrastructure to build new infrastructure, importantly, to have community grants that are plentiful and not just that have to be restrictive, that have so many strings attached. It's hard to get anything done, as they put it. We have to kind of do things on our own. We have to do it with the scraps around us.
So, do you have any plans on the horizon for what you want to do politically?
Yeah. This year is particularly exciting. It doesn't touch on everything I just discussed, but there is a campaign to legalize marijuana in New York. We have a bill called the MARTA bill, called the Marijuana Regulation and Tax Act. It was introduced by Kruger a few years ago, but she is not going to fight for it. She said the Democrats aren't going to fight for it. So it's up to third parties and independent people who consider themselves independent to do so. So I'm one of the local organizers in a new group called the, get this right, Capital Region Coalition for Marijuana Reform. We're a Facebook group at the moment, and we're going to have an organizational meeting next week. You can contact me for more or visit that Facebook group. Marijuana legalization touches on many issues, mass incarceration, the drug war, the waste that's there, the harms that prohibiting and other types of bans causes. It's authoritarian policy, and it has to go. And that's beside the economic arguments for, oh, raising tax revenue, having a new industry, not just smokable pot, but hemp. Importantly, hemp. You can make plastic out of hemp, biodegradable plastic, and as well as thousand and one other uses, industrial or otherwise. And right. With marijuana, important thing about our bill compared to Colorado and Washington is that, A, it allows for homegrown, which is really, really important. It does not limit it to just who can get a license from the state, which can be very expensive and a lot of red tape. But there's an exception for homegrown. And second, the new industry it would create would be horizontal, meaning the producers and the growers of marijuana would be separate financially and legally from the retailers. So you can't have some mega company monopolizing the pot industry, and then it doesn't become like tobacco. So to prevent big marijuana from forming, that's been written in. There's something to change about the law, and that's why we're going to have a lobby day. We're going to campaign, to organize, because acting individually is what leads to kind of hopelessness. You have to have collective action, collective action, whether it's in voting or petitioning and other things like that. We're discussing whether or not to have a smoke-in, which, you know, April 20th is a big day for those. There's going to be one down in New York City at the UN, April 20th. Maybe we'll have one up here. But we'll certainly have a lobby day from which people can meet with their legislators and get the lay of the land on how our government works. It might horrify you. It might anger you. That's a little bit of the point. It's kind of my main goal as an organizer is to radicalize people. And radical does not mean extreme to me. It means getting at the root of problems, to see the truth.
Dan, thank you. And will you come back on Focus on Albany and talk about, you know, all of the stuff that you talked about today, how it's coming along?
Of course.
You've been listening to Dan Platt on Focus on Albany. Actually, you know, you had mentioned contact information for you. Can you repeat that?
Yes, give me a moment. My voicemail is 545-4791. And you can contact and look up the Capital Region Coalition for Marijuana Reform. And that's the local group, and it's kind of a subsidiary, not really, it's a child org of the New York Committee to Legalize Marijuana. And that's the state organizers that I was hooked up with.
Okay. So, Dan, thank you for taking the time to be on Focus on Albany. If you like anything that Dan has said, please go on Twitter, hashtag Focus on Albany, and share your thoughts. Thank you, Dan, and thank you, everybody. Have a great day.
It's a pleasure.